I wonder, thank you. I was going to ask if I could have the first slide. You beat me to it. Thank you very much. I wonder if you know what these are and what they might have been used for. No. One of them, maybe. A bit of. Well, just following on from that. So the one on the right would have been used for those sort of purposes, but a bit more than that. Anybody else? Pardon? No, it wasn't building. Who said that? Full points over here. They were used for timekeeping. So the one at the top, I don't know if you can see it, the one on the top left, it's full of little holes. So the idea is you fill it with a particular amount of water and the water drains out of it and it tells you the time. The other one at the bottom would have been used, both of these would have been used by Egyptians. This one here is a shadow clock, and if you look really carefully, you can see some lines on it. And so the shadow of the sun would cast onto that, kind of like the idea of having it on a sundial, almost. And this one here was used to kind of align the stars, but also tell the time at night. So very interesting and different things. And you got that far quicker than I thought you were going to get, so well done. Time, many would say, is one of the greatest resources that we have in this life. And in our readings today, and I'm very grateful to Jan for reading them, they were quite lengthy, we see how God uses time, whether that is past, present, or future, to work out his will and deliver his promises. In our Old Testament reading this morning, King Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, is disturbed by his dream. And you might remember this is the dream of the large figure standing and has different, he has iron and he has clay feet and he's quite different. So he's quite disturbed by the dream and he seeks an interpretation of it and none is forthcoming from his wise men. So he commands their execution. He was obviously quite hard. And the demand was to include Daniel because at this point he was included in the wise men. He and his friends, as you know, had been taken to Babylon during the exile and they were being trained in the ways of Babylon to become wise men. Now in chapter 1 of the book of Daniel, we are told that it is God who gives Daniel and his friends knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and that Daniel was given the gift of being able to understand visions and dreams of all kinds. So this was not something that they had learned during their training in Babylon, rather it was a gift of God. Now Daniel and his friends were given time to seek God so that they could come up with the interpretation of the king's dream. And so the first thing that Daniel does is he instructs his friends to seek God, to pray that that God may reveal the meaning of the dream. And as they prayed, they waited into the night. Now I wonder, how patient would you say you are? Okay, let me reframe this. How patient would other people say you are? It's quite a different question. Could I have the next slide, please? Now, let's put this to the test. 10 years ago, you sent a parcel. And you waited, or you were told that a parcel was coming to you, and you waited a week for it to arrive, and it didn't. Would you have given it another few days just to make sure that it hadn't been stuck somewhere? Yeah, before you go into customer services. Okay, let's contrast that with today. If you don't get next day delivery, how patient are you really? And how many of you, even knowing it's coming next day, will keep checking your app? We'll keep checking out the window to see where the parcel is, because we've got used to high-speed delivery, we've got used to high-speed internet access at the tip of our fingers, we've got used to being able to access websites and information and shopping any time of the day or night. We're really used to having all structures round about us respond to our needs and respond to them really, really quickly. Now, King Nebuchadnezzar is a king with little patience. You might have got that when he's ordered the execution of all the wise men. Now, he would have been using every he was used to rather having every query and desire met instantaneously. And now this understanding of this dream, his inability to understand the future, is beyond every resource at his disposal. And he is desperate for answers. Such was the disturbance that the dream caused him. Now, in our fast-paced world, we can understand this and often feel the pressure of time weighing in on us. We want everything now, solutions to problems and immediate results. And we can feel like the king, anxious, frustrated, and worried when things are out with our control, whether that be our careers, our relationships, or things do not happen according to our desired timing. And Daniel does not rush into trying to answer the king's query. Instead, he asks for time and he seeks God. A really good example for our living, taking time to seek God in prayer when we seek understanding for those things that are happening in our lives. And also to be patient waiting for the answer, not just to fill in the blanks ourselves when the answer doesn't come quick enough. Daniel isn't stalling, he's acting expectantly. He expects God to transcend him and to intervene. And this is, a powerful reminder to all of us, because I do wonder how often we act expectantly, how often we actually expect God will transcend time and intervene in our living. Could I have the next slide, please? So let's go back again about 10 years or so. Before we all get into using emails, when we sent letters by post. Now, if you sent a letter to a friend in Scotland and you knew that they were going to have to answer you, how quickly would you expect a response? Maybe a week or two? Maybe 3 weeks? And if the letter was sent to a business, you would expect a response probably within 5 working days after the letter got there. So I wonder, how patient were you in those times? I would imagine you're probably quite patient most of the time because that's how things were. That was the pace of life. Let's contrast that again. If you send an email, how quickly do you expect it to be responded to? Everybody's keeping really quiet. Well, it might depend on who you send it to, first off. It might also depend on how often they check their mail. And it also may depend where their emails come in their weekly list of things to do. It may also depend on how many emails they get in any given day. And that is before any personal issues may impact them on responding to you. And yet, I do wonder how often we have acted impatiently by firing off a second email, maybe just hours or days after the first, with a slightly snarky comment attached because the person hasn't responded according to our timeline. And how often have we regretted doing just that? We as a nation are far less patient than we were, and we expect much, much more from people, and we expect it quicker than we ever did. And that can be same, and can be said the same of prayer. We want answers, and we want them quickly. Daniel teaches us the value of waiting for God's timing, which is never early and it's never late. It just might not be the same as our timing. Even in churches, we are impatient. We create plans. We seek to influence events through a myriad of ways. And if we are honest, and we're really honest, we are reluctant to wait on God's timing. Because, we have worked out timelines, we have worked out when our next event's going to be, when our next service is going to be, and you can fill in the blanks. Plans often negate expectation that God will intervene. And when he does, it is often in a way that shows that our plans are invalid or unworkable and they're not of him. Now, Daniel showed that God's intervention often comes when we least expect it, and not on demand. In the reading from Matthew's Gospel, the Messiah comes at a time he was least expected, in a way that seemed to be strange even to the wise men. Now, they expected to find Jesus in a palace, and instead found him in a house. They expected to find him surrounded by wealth, and instead they found him surrounded by poverty. They had followed the star and expected that the Messiah would come, but they did not know God. They couldn't make sense of what they knew without God, and only got so far on their own knowledge. Now, could I have the next one, please? Thank you. Let me ask you, how many post boxes did you pass on the way into church this morning from your home? Two? Four, excellent. What about this one? How many buses did you pass? It's a Sunday morning, so I'll let you off because there's probably not that many out there. But you get the idea. A long time ago, and it is now a very long time ago, when I was a probationer police officer in Glasgow, walking the beat as you did back then, I was asked by an older colleague, how many post boxes have we passed? Strange question. Where is the next one? Where will you find a phone box on this beat? And so on and so on. And he would come back to these things over the months that we were out walking. These physical objects became a very good way of helping me navigate a new environment with all of its dangers. And it helped me become more confident in those who worked with me that their eyes were open and they would recognize whether something or someone was out of place and whether that was good or bad. I tell you this because if you're not aware of your surroundings, then how do you see where God is working in the world, or in your parish, or in your life? Like the wise men, we may find ourselves looking in the wrong place. We may miss what God is doing and what he is calling us to be involved in. Now, the wise men that surrounded Herod also knew the scriptures about the Messiah. They knew the scriptures and could probably quote them really very well, but maybe they had stopped expecting the Messiah. Or perhaps, like the wise men, they expected the Messiah to be born in a place of power. Maybe we could also deduce that they just were not seeking God. They were not aware of their surroundings and what was going on. Maybe life had got overwhelming, and instead of seeking God, they sought their own survival and comfort. Knowing the Bible without knowing God can take us also in the wrong direction. Could I have the next slide, please? Right. Let me ask you how far back in your family's history you can go without looking at one of these family tree sites. Most of us, I would think, would probably know the history of our grandparents and perhaps our great-grandparents. But beyond that, would we need some help? I wonder, does anybody know further back in their history than just the grandparents or great-grandparents? Yeah? Okay. Pardon? Doomsday Book. The Doomsday Book. Wow. Okay, wow. So you've obviously done a fair amount of work. Pardon? Not you? Oh, it's somebody else did the work. It makes for interesting reading. Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Now, for most of us, probably grandparents, we know their stories, or maybe even great-grandparents' stories. And these people would have been the people that passed on faith to parents, or maybe our grandparents, and to our parents, and our own generations. And yet, faith was likely part of numerous generations within each of our family trees. A generational faithfulness, despite us never knowing many of those who had lived before. A faithfulness that may be remembered at Christmas time in traditions and decorations and food and worship, as well as the story of Jesus itself. And yet that faithfulness is under threat from our own actions and that of society in which we live. Our traditions are being overtaken by new language that seeks to dilute the message of the child born in the manger, that seeks to divert people away from the manger and instead to a holiday of indulgence that has no message of hope, no message of peace or of love. attached to it. Our living faith allows for the possibility of generational faithfulness to continue. Daniel waited patiently on God and expected God to intervene, to answer prayer. And sometimes the answer to prayer is not what we would hope for. King Nebuchadnezzar wanted to hear the interpretation of his dream, but for him it was bad news. And sometimes for us the answer is not what we'd hope for, and sometimes we interpret it in a way that means we can continue doing what we are doing rather than God's will for us. Now there's a lighthearted story about this, okay, so I'm going to share it with you. It says this: after starting a new diet, I altered my drive to work to avoid passing my favourite bakery. I accidentally drove by the bakery this morning. As I approached, there in the window was a host of chocolates, donuts, and cheesecakes. I felt this was no accident. So I prayed, "Lord, it's up to you. If you want me to have any of those delicious goodies, create a parking place for me directly in front of the bakery." And sure enough, on the eighth time round around the block, there it was. God is so good. Now, we may all laugh, but I wonder how many of us recognize ourselves in that story and our actions. Maybe not just to do with bakeries either. Now, I started with the image of ancient clocks. Could I have the next slide, please, to tell the time? Now, God, who created time, knows the present and holds the future. And this should fill us with great confidence, but it might also be a challenge, if we are honest, to relinquish control of the many aspects of our lives and instead put our trust in Him and His timing rather than in our own plans. As life begins to return to normality, of routines and issues and problems may start to pile up. Maybe we need to take a lesson from Daniel and take time to seek God, to pray, and importantly, to listen and to wait for the answer, to live faithfully in the meantime, because God will answer in God's good time. Amen.